once in a while, once in a while, and it's just a great reminder of how not to be. It goes like this. Believe that I believe, or no less, that I am right and no one else is right. Feel as I feel, think as I eat, and drink as I drink, look as I look, and do always as I do. For then, and only then, will I have fellowship with you. Unfortunately,
my
And there have been some people in that work context that were way above me who I've done that to. Because it didn't matter. I don't care who they are. I don't want them to be done. But that's how I would feel. How about you? I think you would have some similar response. Or you may feel like, well, I'm not important if you wouldn't say a word to this stuff. That's what happens. That's what takes place. So if you have a listing here, you will be a valued person. You will be a person people want to seek out because they know you will listen to them. The second is a calm spirit. Anger does not bring about the righteous life, James says in James chapter 1, verse 20. How would it be great if you never got angry? Wouldn't that be great? If you never had that anger impulse come up within you at whatever might trigger that? Or whatever triggers in you that anger response? You've heard me say this before, and I'll say it again. When someone says to me, you may be angry, that is an impossible thing. That can't happen. Nobody makes you angry. You choose to be angry. You have an emotional reaction to what somebody does, yes, and it's anger, but it's not because of what they're doing, it's because of what's happening in you. And in me, and I have to stop when I get in that situation and say, why am I feeling this? Why am I being angry about something that is so trivial? I've asked a married couple, people that have married a long time, over 20 years. I've done this through the years. What has your biggest argument been about? They're all meaningless things. I have a very good friend of mine, Christian guy, seminary grad, a professor, a pastor, really smart guy. Been married to his wife for 40 some years. I said, the things Larry and his wife did is Lotus. Larry, what was your biggest fight with Lotus about? If I gave you a year, you would never get it. It was about an ice cream. That was your biggest argument. And that usually is what you want. The biggest argument isn't over the deity of Christ, it's over some trivial thing. That's what happened. And so James says, have a calm spirit. He also says, have a clean lifestyle. He says, get rid of all moral filth. James 1, verse 21. We know what that is. I don't even have to write it on a board. You know what that is. You just say, that's not going to come into my life. I'm not going there. Not for a second. Not going there. So I know it can't draw me closer to the Lord or closer to the meaningful relationship that I have. Won't do it. So, a clean lifestyle. Next is a compassionate heart. James 1:27 says, look after orphans and widows. Be caring with people. He goes on and he says, in James 2, he says, don't show favoritism. Have a compassionate heart. And then today, he says, have a controlled tongue. Watch what you say. I have been blessed, I'd say, blessing and a curse, depending on how I interact with myself, being fairly quick on my feet, verbally. And when I was younger, that would get me in trouble. And I had some people who cared about me, confront me lovingly, and say, you know, what you say to people can hurt them. And you really hurt so-and-so. You created a funny situation by what you said at their expense, and they're very hurt. And so I learned early on that I have to edit myself. And my wife was really good about that. And in sharing with me at times when I should have edited myself. So I practiced that. A controlled tongue is key in our lives. I mean, think about the things that you would like to take back that you said. In an emotional rush of anger or frustration or whatever it might be. I'll just confess something to you that I've been marked by something my dad said years ago out of frustration because I was on my own time frame as a child, as an adult, and my dad couldn't handle it. And so there were times when he, out of frustration, would make a comment to me. And that's impacted. And stay with me. He never planned it. He didn't say to himself one day, I'm going to say something to Bill that will mark him for his whole life and it'll be a negative. He didn't do that. It's something that happened. Something that came out of it. illustration of how I was behaving. So words are key. Let's hear what James has to say, starting in verse 1 of James 3. He says, not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect. They will keep their whole body in check. That's sarcasm. If you have to pick that up. Because nobody can do that. That's what he's saying. When you put bits in the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue is also a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind. But no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth comes praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers and sisters, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. He begins with a warning to all who teach. This is a verse I have looked at every week pretty much my whole life as a pastor. Verses 1 and 2. It really isn't for everyone. It's not for everyone. In the scattered Jewish Christian fellowship he is writing to, there were probably many who sought to be teachers, just like today. Because what do you see? You see that person out front teaching, you think that's what you have to do. James is giving a warning here to stop becoming teachers in such large numbers. They may have been those who sought the position without the ability or the spiritual gift of teaching. Most likely, there were those seeking to be teachers who had no regard for the responsibility of the position. I can remember working again with college students, about 200 college students in this church, and we would have a Sunday morning study school for college students. And there'd be 150 to 200 students, and we had a class, we had them all broken down into groups. So each group of about 13 teachers or so had, you know, 8 to 10 or so students. I remember people would come to us and they'd say, I want to be a teacher, I want to work with the college students. And their motivation was right on. But the method in which they were wanting to work with college students wasn't. And we'd say, well, have you taught before? Well, no, you know, not really. I helped in the, you know, the kindergarten class in the Sunday school here at church. I'd really like to work with college students. And so we give them a class. We give them a class of 10 students. And the next week they'd be gone. And the next week they'd be the big. And we realized that this person's motivation was right, but how we were helping them or not helping them, applying their motivation was out of balance. And we'd suggest something else. But I've seen that happen. People have great joy in wanting to do that, but it's not for them. If you've ever had a good teacher, you know what I'm talking about. I have had many good teachers. Teachers that really made a difference in life. So it's not for everyone. Because I've had some bad teachers too. The stakes are high. James says, we who teach will be judged more strictly. It's condemnation is what he is saying. Teaching is not to be taken lightly. A warning is issued about the importance and dangers of the tongue. Because teachers deal with human lives. Notice that James includes himself in this warning. The judgment is strict because people's lives and eternity hang in the balance. That's why when I see cults, I wish there was something more I could do than what I am doing. Because they are being teachers and leading people the wrong way. Same with other religions lead people the wrong way. In Acts, Luke writes in Acts 15:24, "We have heard that some went out from us without our authorization and disturbed you, troubling your minds by what they said." That's exactly what he said. That's what Jesus said. That's what takes place. No profession is more liable to bring about spiritual and intellectual pride than teaching. Why teach? Ego, pride, limelight, these are all motivated. Or is it the post to which God leads you? Is it the post to which you naturally float into? That's what it needs to be. Not something that you say, "I'm going to do this." The writer of Proverbs, Solomon, in Proverbs 10, verse 20, says it this way: "The tongue of the righteous is a choice silver." When you have a teacher that can really encourage you and motivate you in whatever subject it might be, not just preaching or teaching in churches or in Bible schools or seminaries, but in the secular arena, that can teach you and motivate you for a subject, that makes all the difference in the world. We've all had teachers who do the other. Make us go to sleep during your lecture. A good teacher is a valuable asset. They impact one's life. I can remember an English teacher I had as a junior in high school, Mr. Parkinson. Great God. He was one of the only teachers that ever motivated me. And this was an English class. He sat people according to your grade. And I ended up in the back row. I didn't end up there, I shouldn't say that. At the beginning of the year, I was in the back row. And the girl that sat right next to his desk, which was the number one position, and I'm not making this name up, this was her name, Israel, Sherry Good. And I sat there in the back row, and I looked where she was, and I'm leaning up there. And what Mr. Parkinson did, it really fit well with my competitive mentality at times. Because he would post your grade so you would see where you are. And so I really started to focus on that class. I put my talk to him to make sure I understood what the assignment was, what was I supposed to write, and all of that. And slowly but surely, I made my way with about, I don't know, 8 weeks left in school. I was sitting right next to Sherry. I looked at her going, "I'm going to do that." She's like, "You're scaring me." And sure enough, the 6 weeks left in the class, I was number one. That was all because of Mr. Parkinson as a teacher. I had other teachers. I was still in the last row of their class and could care less. I wanted to be in the last row. I didn't want to be any closer to the teacher. It was because of Mr. Parkinson. No one can tell me that a good teacher doesn't make a difference. Just like a good coach. Classic example in coaching, the University of Michigan. 3 years ago, the University of Michigan wasn't even a 500 team. Today, right now, they're the number two team in the nation because they got a coach named Jim Harbaugh. Everywhere he's gone, he's turned the program around. He's been a winner. Doesn't mean he won every game, but he's turned the program around. They've got Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh went to college at the University of Michigan. He made a huge difference. Within 2 years, with college students who leave when they're seniors, he has Michigan undefeated at number 2 in the nation. That's what a good teacher does. Makes the impact. And that's what James is saying. He also says no one does it perfectly in verse 2. Here is an understatement by James. All stumble. That's what he said. And that's not to be a surprise. Even teachers make mistakes. Even the best ones. James is declaring the universality of sin even among teachers. Remember the words of the great prophet Isaiah. Remember when he stood before God in Isaiah 6. Remember his great line. "I am a man of unclean lips. I am a man of unclean lips." He knew he had no right to be. He didn't just say, oh, I'm a sinner, I'm a horrible person, when I'm standing here, I can see that now. No, he knows exactly what reality is. He says, I'm a man of unbelief. And he's speaking, in my estimation, for all of us. The tongue is primary evidence of our fallen sinful state. Even teachers are susceptible to stumbling. We are to remember that we all have feet of clay. All make mistakes. The last part of verse 2, James even says that one who control his or her tongue would never sin in any other way. He says if you could control your tongue perfectly, you would not be able to sin. This is a real big if. It's a huge if. No one is capable of doing it. That's why I said it's like sarcasm. I challenge you to try it. You won't be able to do it. The implication is that one must be convinced that teaching is what God wants them to do. And others must see this in them as well. I never set out to be a pastor. That's not what I thought I was capable of. But there were enough people who came to me and said, this line, you ought to be a pastor. I started to believe them. You should. You know. But others need to see it. When people say you're good at something, listen to them. They're saying it because they see it in you. Some will say, gosh, you're so good with kids. You're just great with kids. They seem to respond to you. That's a sign. That's a great sign. My oldest son, who we just visited, I don't know what it is, but he's got it. He is great with high school students. Guys just walk through. He runs a small group for the high school department where he goes to church. Big church, 2,000 plus people. Pretty good sized high school department. And all the groups are like, you know, 7, 8 guys in a group. Drew has 16. Drew's an introvert. He's the quietest one of the whole family. Our family. Yet he's kind. He just hasn't. When you're gifted, and God gives you a gift, whatever it might be, and that's what you call it. Don't look at something else, oh, I can just do that. Because it may not be your gift. Might be, but it may not be. And so, when you think about the fact no one does it perfectly, you have to remember that's true. James then goes again into remember the impact of your words. Remember the impact. Remember how it's going to impact you. There are 4 characteristics of the tongue. And all by way of word pictures or illustrations, James makes this point. He creates mental images so it'll stay with the people because James is a good teacher. He's a Hebrew. And remember, Hebrews, when they write, they repeat things over and over again. Because repetition, all teachers know, is one of the best teachers. You repeat something over and over until you get it. First of all, it's a controlling factor in our lives. Verses 3 to the first part of verse 5. It's small, yet amazingly powerful, the tongue. It controls, it truly controls our lives. We make or break relationships with it. We succeed or fail in careers with it. And James uses 2 word pictures. I'm very familiar. The first is in riding horses. You control the horse with bit and bridle if you know what you're doing. I went horseback riding with a friend of ours in the San Francisco Bay Area up in the hills. And I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm on this horse. And the horse decides in its little head, you know, I feel like galloping. And it just takes off. I'm like barely hanging on. I use muscles in my legs and at that point didn't even exist. It keep me on the horse. And finally I grabbed the reins and whoa, you know, because I've never seen the Lone Ranger do that in 1957 on TV. You know, whoa, and the horse stopped. Put one inside of control. It's scary. It's frightening when it's out of control. Same thing with the whole idea of the ship. When sailing with cousins and friends. was a rudder. The boat just went right over, right in the middle of the harbor. Floundering there, and another boat came along to help us out. But I know exactly what James is talking about in this verse, where he talks about the horse with bit the bridle, or the boat controlled by a small little rudder. When it goes wrong big time. Again, Solomon, Proverbs 18:21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. How true that is. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. That's why James says, be quick to listen, slow to speak, because he understands what Solomon is saying. We need to comprehend its controlling power. I can encourage people, I can discourage people. I can empower or I can deflate. I can build up or destroy by how I choose to use the tongue. It's also a destructive force in our life. The last part of verse 5, and then verse 6. The illustration is obvious. A tiny spark can set a whole forest on fire. We know that, living here on the West Coast. Like I said, I just got back in California. Every summer they have fire. It's like the fire festival. You know, fires start all the time. Huge fires. Killing fires. Because, this is just a destructive factor, it's a world of evil, James says. James isn't saying that the tongue is the sum total of evil and sin, but in a sense it represents what's evil in this world. Pride is seen and heard through the tongue, as is lust, and bitterness, and rage, and selfishness. He goes so far as to say it is itself set on fire by hell. Now, the word for hell that's used in the original Greek here is Gehenna. Some of you know what that is. Gehenna was a spot just south of Jerusalem where they put all the rubbish in the city, that's where they placed it, to be burned. So it stunk. When it was hot, it had horrid smells. It became a symbol of hell. James says this is the source of our work. He's saying you have to look at it that dramatically, because that is reality. Just look at what's said about other people on the television in the political realm right now. Unbelievable. I mean, even if it was all true about all the people up there, you think you'd be a little tactful. Have a little tact on how you share that. But no, because it's shared to destroy the other person. It's not shared to help them overcome a weakness. It's shared to destroy them. That's why James says in extreme language what the tongue is. And we can take note of that and realize that in our lives, we can be the same person. We can be the same. Remember the Nuremberg trials when it was one of the leading Nazi leaders was brought into court. And this one man writes about it. He was sitting out in the audience during the Nuremberg trials. The Nuremberg trials, if you don't know, were the trials in 1944 in Nuremberg, Germany, where they tried for criminal acts during World War II, various Nazi leaders, generals, all kinds of different. And one of them, I think it was Goebbels, was brought in. It's either Goebbels or Himmler, I'm not sure. One of those two was brought in. I say that because one of them actually committed suicide. It wasn't happening. They came in, and a person watching that wrote about it, and he was shocked because he had never seen it. And he had done such despicable, horrible things to people. Millions of people. And he walked in, and he was just this little man. Not even 5 seconds. And the guy sat there and was shocked. And he wrote about it that way. Shocked. Because he thought, he's just like me. He's not this horrid monster, this kind of Frankensteinish kind of monster. He's just like me. It made him realize how capable he would be of horrendous acts if he was to go off the rails, so to speak, and see himself as all power. It is a world of evil and it is set on fire by hell. It also is an uncontrollable factor in our lives. Verse 7a. We have dominion over all the animals in creation. Ever go to SeaWorld? Amazing. An aquarium. Amazing. We have dominion over all those animals. Yet we cannot tame the tongue. James uses the word restless. It's restless in verse 8. It means unstable, inconsistent. The idea that you never know what will happen next. What someone might say. We're to deal with our words in a way where we're cautious. We reflect on something, we don't just react. Most of the people that I know just react. They get mad. They give in to that emotion rather than saying, why am I feeling this way? Not that person's fault. I'm having this feeling. They can't make me have that feeling. But I'm feeling it. Why is that? And the challenge would be to talk with someone and say, why do I feel this way? And they help you explore what that possibility might be. It's a destructive factor in our lives. It's an uncontrollable factor in our lives. And it's also a revealing factor in our lives, verses 9 to 12. It is revealed in its inconsistent behavior. It is used to bless and to curse. James asks two questions, each have the same answer. No. These questions have to do with the source of our words. Our speech or words reveal the source of control in our minds. If I get angry and I lash out at someone, am I going to say that I'm being led by the Holy Spirit? But I won't. No, I just said, Lord, you sit this one out, I'll handle it. That's what we do, yes. Remember what Jesus said in Matthew 15:10. Jesus called the crowd to him and said, he calls everybody to him. Then this is the first thing he says. Listen and understand. What goes into your mouth does not defile you. Eat all the chips and dip you want. But what comes out of your mouth, that is what defiles you. It's what we say, how we say it, when we say it, and with what intensity we say it. Again, Solomon, Proverbs 12, the last part of verse 18. The tongue of the wise brings healing. The tongue of the wise brings healing. We're going to end with a little reading. We'll just relax. This comes from a sermon that was given in 1942 by C.S. Lewis. The sermon is called The Way to Glory. When a popular speaker would come to a sermon at St. Mary's Church in Oxford, they said there would be like two to three bites deep, you know, all parts of the church. When Lewis would speak, it'd be 8 to 10. He's talking about how God is going to give us glory. And he's saying that is the most amazing thought in the world. And he puts it this way. Meanwhile, the cross comes before the crown, and tomorrow is a Monday morning. A cleft is opened in the pitiless walls of the world, and we are invited to follow our great captain inside. But following him is, of course, the essential point. That being so, it may be asked what practical use there is in the speculations which I have been indulging. I can think of at least one such use. It may be possible for each to think too much of his own potential glory hereafter. It is hardly possible for him to think too often or too deeply about that of his neighbor. The load or weight or burden of my neighbor's glory should be laid daily on my back, a load so heavy that only humility can carry it, and the backs of the proud will be broken. It is a serious thing to live in a society of possible gods and goddesses, to remember that the dullest and most uninteresting person you talk to may one day be a creature, which if you saw it now, you would be strongly tempted to worship, or else a whore and a corruption such as you now meet, if at only in a nightmare. All day long, we are in some degree helping each other to one or other of these destinations. It is in the light of these overwhelming possibilities, it is with the awe and the circumspection proper to them, that we should conduct all our dealings with one another. All friendships, all loves, all play, all politics. There are no ordinary people. You have never talked to a mere mortal. That's amazing. That is so true. Think about that with whomever you speak with. When you think about what James has told us today about the tongue, we never speak to a mere mortal. Maybe that will help us live lives in living in relational life. And we will build bridges if we practice what James has said, just in this text, more than we ever have before.